Steve Blass has joined us on Sports Byline USA. 10 years in the majors, all of those in a Pirates uniform, and in the 71 World Series against the Orioles, he pitched two complete game wins, allowing only 7 hits and 2 runs in 18 innings. You made a statement before the break that I thought was interesting, and I understand it, but I wonder if you'll explain it to the listeners. You said you knew how to pitch, not just throw. Tell me about when that first time is that you knew that you were pitching instead of throwing.
Well, it goes back to a high school scenario where I did throw the ball by everybody, and I thought, boy, this is going to be easy. I'm going to get into the pros. I'm going to get into professional baseball, and it's just going to be a ride right to the top. But when I went to the rookie league in 1960 after graduating from high school and throwing 5 no-hitters that year, there were kids from Texas, California, Florida, and I said, whoa, wait a minute. These guys are very, very, very good. And the first 2 years that I played, I got knocked around. I went to the rookie league and won a few games, and then I went to Class D. They had those classifications. And I got knocked around, and all of a sudden I went from 4-1 the first month that I played professionally to 1-5. And I called my dad, and I said, Dad, this is too tough. You know, I don't know if this is going to happen. He said, well, you ain't going to find out if you come home. So I stayed, and of course that's one of those life lessons. And he wasn't just bullying me or being tough for no good reason. He knew that I had to give it a longer run than that. And then the next year I had a good year, but then I moved up, I got knocked back again. I went to Class A, got beat up, and went back to Class B where I was 17-3. And that's when I realized I can't throw the ball by people. I've got to learn how to pitch, and I've got to come up with a breaking ball I can depend on. And I'm not going to throw it 95 miles an hour, even though they didn't measure speed back then. Your speed was measured by how many people you got out, a different philosophy, different approach. But I realized that I had to become a pitcher. And so I think that was a realization. When I got knocked around in 1962, my second full pro year, I realized, hey, I can't throw the ball by these people. They're too darn good. And that's when I realized, you know, I got to learn how to pitch. And that was the beginning. And it doesn't happen overnight, but that's when I realized, if I didn't learn how to do that, I was going to be coming home. And that approach kind of stayed with me, and I learned a slider because I could throw it more consistently as a breaking ball as opposed to the curve. I kept the curve, but the slider became the pitch that I won in the big leagues with because I could throw it where I wanted to in the strike zone. And if a pitcher can throw a breaking ball in the strike zone when he wants to, even behind in the count, you have a chance to be successful. And that was kind of the evolution of me being a better pitcher.
Steve, I mentioned about you led the National League in shutouts with 5-1 season, and you talked about Bob Gibson and the 28 complete games. That was a different mentality back then. I want to talk to you about that mentality, how the specialization of baseball today has changed the pitching game, because now you've got the setup guy, you've got the middle reliever, and you've got the closer. Whereas you guys, and you know this as well as I do because you knew Bob Gibson, if you tried to come out there as a manager and take the ball out of his hands, you were probably going to get knocked on your rear end. And I think every pitcher during that era had that approach. It was a badge of honor to start a game and to finish a game. Tell me a little bit about the mentality then as compared to now.
Yeah, it was a different world then than it is now. And you mentioned specialized pitchers in the bullpen. Also, the economics are a factor there. We were trained and developed when they gave you the ball. It was, as you said, it was an honor to have a baseball in a professional game, especially in a major league game. That was an honor when they put that ball in your locker before you got to the ballpark. And we were trained to pitch the ball game, not a certain number of innings, not a certain number of pitches. And that's the way it was. And our philosophy was different. Now, the economics have a big bearing on this because these kids are getting millions of dollars and the organizations, quite frankly, walk on eggs trying to keep them healthy. I think that's a catch-22. We were developed this way. The more you pitch, the stronger your arm gets. The stronger your arm gets, the more you resist injury. And that was the way we were brought up. That's the way we were trained and developed. And even though, you know, I was pitching 200 innings a year in the minor leagues and weighed 175 pounds, but it built up my arm strength, and I wound up never having a sore arm. Right now, they're being careful with these kids, and the economics are I think a huge part of it. And you know, I keep asking baseball people why this is, and they said, well, Steve, consider your arm was worth about $15,000 a year. These kids' arms are worth $2-3 million. So that has a lot to do with it. And I understand the world is different that way, But I still think that you might see at some point going back to the philosophy of building up arm strength by pitching more. There's rumblings about that now. Nolan Ryan has spoken to that issue. The baseball people in Japan have spoken to that issue. And we might see more of that down the road. I don't know. Right now, they're being real careful with these kids with the economics.
Was Elroy Face one of your teammates?
Absolutely. For a lot of years. Elroy, and the save back then wasn't one pitch or one inning or two batters. Elroy used to get saves pitching three innings. And Dave Justy, my old roommate, did the same thing. So, we are in the world of specialization. I understand that right now. And you have a closer, you have a setup man and all that. And there's a pitch count. The batters told us what our pitch count was. If we were getting them out, it wasn't too many. If they were knocking us around, it was too many. So it was a little different approach then. But Elroy was great. The great story about Elroy, they used to ask him, what's the difference between a forkball, his specialty, and the split finger pitch, the split finger fastball? Elroy said, oh, about $3 million a year.
He had that one season. What year was that in which he just won game after game after game? And I'm trying to do it because I was a young kid who used to listen to the Pirate games on radio, and I remember there was a game in which he went extra innings against somebody, and they went toe-to-toe.
Well, yeah, Elroy's big season was 1959. He was 18 and 1. So not only was he saving games, but he was coming into games where the Pirates might have been behind or the games might have been tied, so he wound up getting the decision rather than the save. So it was one of those, all the stars were lined up. It was the perfect storm for getting decisions rather than just saves for Elroy, and he was just absolutely phenomenal. You know, he's only about 5'7", but everybody in Pittsburgh knew when he walked in from the bullpen, he was the Baron of the bullpen, he was looking like he was about 6'12", and he had no fear. Long before that phrase came up by the shoe companies, he had no fear.
Take me back to the 1971 season where the Pirates go to the World Series and beat the Orioles. What was the catalyst of that success?
Well, the catalyst of that success in my mind was the development of, in my experience, the best minor league system that existed in baseball. You can talk about the Cardinals and Dodgers. Yeah, great, great systems. But think of that team. Clemente basically was homegrown. We drafted him Rule 5 from the Dodgers, so he was a Pirate. And you go around Richie Hebner, Gene Alley, Dave Cash, Willie Stargell. You had Gene Kleins. You had Milt May in back of Manny Sanguian. You had myself. You had Doc Ellis. You had Bob Moose. You had Bob Veal. So much homegrown talent. Al Oliver, Bob Robertson, just... It was the maturation. This team was getting together and coming up through, and you could see it coming. And it was just we all arrived at the same time, and we just really took off. And Bill Verdon, by the way, says the next year in 72, and Bill Verdon has managed everywhere, has played in the big leagues for a lot of years, great reputation, one of the best baseball men that I've ever run across, said the 72 Pirates were even better than the 71 Pirates, primarily because we had gone through the experience of winning the World Series. But that 71 team was loaded with talent. And, watching Clemente play every day, I mean, I tell people he had the ability to turn a 10-year Major League veteran into a 10-year-old kid because he was magic to watch. You just didn't want to take your eyes off him. He was just special. He played at a level above the average major leaguer, who is gifted, but he played in another level above that.
I want to talk a little bit more about him in the next segment, but in the 2 minutes that we have before we have to break here, where was the turning point in that 71 World Series? What was the key moment in that series, Steve?
Well, I'm going to wind up talking about myself, but I will say it with very much honesty. They beat us up in the first two games. They singled us together to death in one game, and then they hit a bunch of home runs in the second game. And I was scheduled to pitch the third one, and I didn't know what kind of team I was facing, a power team or a contact team that made a lot of hits. And we came back to Pittsburgh, and the third game I pitched a three-hitter complete game. It was the game of my life to that point. And so that stopped. If you're going to go down 3-0, and that was a team that had won 16 games in a row when you consider the last part of their season and their playoffs and the two wins against us in the first two games, that team was rolling. And if we go down 3-0, you're cooked. Basically, you're cooked. They only have to win 1 out of 4. So, to me, that was the turning point of the World Series.
When you take a look at the World Series and then having won it, what were your moments, you know, your thoughts immediately after that World Series?
Well, it was ecstatic. You know, I was numb. You know, after we won the seventh game, I was numb for a couple of days. But, boy, I made up for it in the coming weeks. I celebrated very, very thoroughly. But it was just, you know, the days after that, you're just swimming in the euphoria. We're the world champions. It's over. We did it. It's done. They can't take it away from us now. And as I look back now with a perspective, to have gone through that year with that group of 29 or 28 players, you know, in and out of that roster, that is special. I look at that World Series ring, and I don't think about the World Series check, although it did come in handy. Nothing like they get now. But I look at that ring, and I said, I went through that whole experience, you know, 30 games in spring training, 162 games in the season, and then 7 games in the World Series, and I will never forget those people. Those people are etched in my mind.
Steve Blass has joined us on Sports Byline. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA.